Next Curve.
Welcome, this is Leonard Lee, Managing Director of Next Curve, your host for today's webinar. Thank you for joining today's Rethink event. And in this session, we will be discussing the past, present, and future of IoT with a very special guest, Rob Tiffany, CTO of Hitachi Lumada. Before we begin, I'd like to introduce Next Curve very quickly. We are a San Diego-based research consultancy focused on providing experience-based advisory services to inspire our clients' digital future. We advise across a wide range of digital topics, drawing from the expertise and experience of our executive consultants and analysts. I'm very happy to finally have Mr. Rob Tiffany on with us today. And for those of you who don't know who Rob is, you really need to get to know him. I call him the IoT Buddha because he is always dropping nuggets of IoT wisdom as he tours the world evangelizing digital technologies and the wonderful possibilities that they enable. Right, Rob?
Absolutely. And, I try to be like Yoda.
Yes, exactly. As I mentioned prior, he is the CTO of Hitachi Lumada and is responsible for Hitachi's IoT platform. I first met Rob last year at the IoT Solution World Congress in Barcelona. He's a wonderful guy. And he just happens to be one of the top influencers on the topic of IoT. And he has lived in a Navy submarine. Now, wow. That is cool.
That's pretty crazy stuff. Absolutely. There was a lot of IoT going on in the submarine a long time ago.
there's been an IoT in the military for a long time, right? I mean, that's absolutely where a lot of all this stuff is originated before it even went to industrial.
Absolutely. I think all that stuff helps me stay grounded in this space is knowing how pedestrian and how long this stuff's been around.
Yeah, exactly. And I think that's very important insight. And then to be a leader in the discourse around IoT today, it really puts you in a special position, I think. And that's one of the reasons why I'm really excited. Number one, to have met you, to have had the opportunity to follow you and get to know you and your perspectives on IoT and its future and its present. Thank you so much, Rob. We finally made it. You're on.
Thank you.
We are also joined by Dean Freeman, Next Curve Principal. Dean has a distinguished 17-year career with Gartner as a research vice president with the Semiconductor Group. Dean's research focus was on the semiconductor forecast and leading the IoT Center of Excellence. And we welcome his expertise on various IoT topics and his deep knowledge of the semiconductor industry and markets. And thank you, gentlemen, for joining this morning. Let's get into our discussion. What do you say?
Sounds good.
Sounds like a plan.
Great. So, Rob, our agenda for today, what we wanted to do is pick your brain, get some Yoda knowledge from you on a couple of key topics around IoT. And I think a good starting point would be to talk about the Internet of Things itself, because I think it's one of, it's becoming, or maybe even from the beginning, it's been a confused topic. Given how it's evolved, I think it continues to become more confusing. And yeah. I'd like to pick your brain on what are some of the ways that you have approached clients and helping them understand the Internet of Things and get them grounded in terms of what the implications and the benefits of IoT are. And then we'd like to then talk about the genesis of IoT, give our audience a bit of a background, and given your deep history and experience with IoT-related technologies and now working with clients and applying those technologies to their businesses, getting your insights and stories from you on how IoT came to be as we know it today. And then we'd also like to have more of a forward-looking discussion and get your points of view on how things have changed and what's changing, what's driving this next evolution of IoT going forward. And then finally, we hear a lot about how IoT is going to change the world, like blockchain is going to change the world, and all these transformative technologies are going to change the world. But we'd like to also get your point of view on how these technologies related to IoT are going to shape our future. Does that sound good?
That sounds good. We'll give it the old college try.
So yeah, this is going to be great because we have two IoT powerhouses on the call today, and this should be really good. So let's jump into that first topic here, which is the Internet of Things. And, you know, I think the question here is it really too big to understand? Because it seems to encompass everything, right? When you look at IoT or when you talk about IoT or you hear about IoT now, it went from this initial simple idea of connected devices, machine to machine communications and sensors. But then now it seems like everyone's throwing every digital technology out there, every buzzword, every hyped technology into this bucket called IoT. And then also it seems to be permeating discussions around every single application that you can imagine. So even though people are saying, hey, you need to have an IoT strategy, you need to do something with IoT, it seems like everything is already kind of IoT. But I wanted to get your thoughts on how you help clients really understand what IoT is and why they should even care.
Sure. And this is just an overwhelming slide. Look at all that stuff. You know what? I think it's like lots of things in life. When you talk about just whatever the subject is, you need to learn something and it seems like a daunting task and it seems like a mountain that's too high to climb and you really need to break it down into pieces to really make it more understandable. I know lots of people had different definitions around IoT, but if you go back to the original core definition of it, we've got these things that maybe smart products, sensors, whatever, and they've got some kind of internal state, some information they want to tell you, and we're going to communicate that state somewhere else, and you're going to know it remotely. I know there's lots of ways to say that same thing, but at the core of IoT, it's things, it's what they want to tell you, and remotely being able to know that somewhere else. Everything else is something that's been layered onto that, or maybe it's things you need to facilitate that. You know, it's wireless communications. I need to store data. I need to move data. What am I going to do afterwards? I'm going to analyze it. You know, especially with customers, they feel overwhelmed right now. There's been no shortage of hype, as you well know, in the last several years, and it's going to be a multi-trillion dollar business. And every analyst firm talks about how many tens of billions of devices are going to be connected by which date. And I think it intimidates customers. They just want the value. I think it's so important to break it down, you know, because lots of people are, oh, well, AI and IoT are part of the same thing, or ML or deep learning or whatever. Breaking it apart and just talking about, I need to connect the things, I need to collect their data, I might need to manage that data somehow, and we can talk about that. And then I'm going to probably do something with that data. I'm going to analyze it somehow, maybe simply, maybe in an advanced way, and then I'm going to take actions. It should be that simple when you break it down. On the left-hand side of your slide, all these digital technologies. Yeah, that thing probably needs a semiconductor. It's probably got a little microcontroller, MCU, and some associated sensors with a machine. What's something that everyone can understand? Well, before we had the Internet of Things, we had the Internet of People, the Internet of Humans. Those are web servers and web browsers and people interacting with either back-end systems or other people. And then they started doing it on phones. And so it's all been about people. And now it's just things get to join the conversation. How you slice and dice that, I guess, where things get interesting.
When I think about the internet, I think of it as the internet of content. So you have content. And then the thing with social, we don't have social in here, even though, you know, when you take things back to maybe 5 years ago when people were talking on cam, whatever order of cloud, mobile, big data, and social that you have. But social really, I think, is the thing that brought the internet of people together, right? Went beyond content. And then now you have things. I'm glad that you brought that up. But I think also you need to think about the role that social has as well in this fabric of internet of everything, if you will.
Sure.
What would you say is the number one hang up that, or the disconnect that your clients are dealing with? Because, you know, board members are saying, hey, we need an IoT strategy, or you have the CEO saying, hey, look, guys, Dean Freeman is telling us we need to have IoT strategy. Let's get an IoT strategy. Let's just do something IoT. That key hang up. And since I brought up Dean's name as well, you could, Dean, you could follow up with what you've experienced as being the big hang ups in conversations with clients.
Certainly.
I think the biggest hang up and what's preventing this whole failure to launch, or what's preventing, is the media analysts, the news, whatever out there in the last several years has gone from just IoT being connecting things and remotely knowing them to conflating, I have to do ML and deep learning and AI in order to get value from IoT. Lots of our friends and colleagues are in this echo chamber where we read the same articles, we see the same stuff on the internet, and we all believe that it's the real world where, of course, everyone's doing AI. Of course, everyone's doing deep learning. The reality is none of that could be further from the truth. Almost nobody is using that technology. As it turns out, almost no one's even connected their things yet. And so we're really getting ahead of ourselves. What I want to get across to people, I'm like Forrest Gump out there, there is tremendous value in just remotely knowing the state of your things without any analytics at all. And then you can take baby steps with the simplest analytics. Talk about all kinds of scenarios. You know, you've got all these smart cities, smart energy. Let's look at smart energy. There are people, colleagues I've worked with in the embedded space and, you know, my time at Microsoft for years, that they are going out and helping apartment complexes or buildings or different things in cities save 20% on their energy bill each year. And guess what? It didn't take deep learning or anything like that. It took connecting to HVAC systems, heating systems, and really doing just some simple rules. And all of a sudden, the customer gets value. Oh, I'm now spending 20% less per year on my energy bill than I was before, or I'm using less water, things like that. Customers really dig that kind of stuff. They get scared and overwhelmed when everyone's talking about AI, because guess what? They don't know what AI is. They think it's the Terminator or something, or Skynet. And
right.
But you know what they can't understand is, hey, I'm going to connect these things, and with some real simple if this then that stuff, I'm going to save you 20% a year on your energy bill. How does that sound? Hey, that sounds great. I'm all in, you know?
Yeah.
I think that's the disconnect.
Yeah. No, and Rob, I think that's a great example. Elon Musk has come out and scared us with AI, and as has Jeff Bezos. And everybody says, oh, AI is going to rule the world, or robotics are going to take over everything. That's such a small percentage of what the IoT is really about. And I like your example of energy management, because that's something that I've spent a lot of time in. And you're exactly right. You go out, you make sure that the HVAC and chiller are running efficiently. So you just put a couple of sensors in there to make sure that their temperatures are what they're supposed to be. You also go ahead and make sure that the secretary does not have control of the thermostat. So maybe put more thermostats in the room to do more systematic control. And then you make sure your variable air controllers are working, so that when it says, oh yeah, we need to just run air, or we need to run cooling or heating in this area, the vent actually opens and works. And so with those four or five simple changes, as you said, simple rules, you can save 20 to 30% of the energy in a building, and you know, make a lot of money these days based upon demand response requirements. So I think that was a great example setting that up with respect to what the industry is doing. You know, I'm at the IoT World Conference today. The leading keynote this morning was another market analyst firm hyping up the IoT. But he was good to a certain extent with which he said he was using a survey, and he was saying, well, you know, you only have this many installations. You only have this many people that are interested in it. And oh, by the way, smart cities, they're not really smart yet because they don't have the budget to put all this stuff in. I think we're really the media and analysts, so I'm to blame as well as Leonard. You know, we kind of, oh, that's right. You're a consultant. I'm the analyst.
Yeah, there
so
you
I'm
go.
To blame. We're putting the cart a little bit ahead of the horse, and but you know that's part of what we get paid to do is looking 4 to 5 years ahead, and then reality is 4 to 5 years behind. So you've got that balance of, I need to measure something, and you defined it perfectly with respect to that. You measure, you collect, you analyze, and then you take action. Where everybody gets confused is in that taking action, because that then leads into a lot of these other things that you were discussing with respect to artificial intelligence and machine learning. But initially, keep it simple, stupid. And I think the CEOs and CFOs and CIOs that are looking at that, that's helping them get a leg up on implementing before you try to do all these crazy things that somebody else would try to sell you.
Absolutely.
Great. Well, there's two takeaways that I'm getting out of what we've discussed so far. Is number one, find yourself a self-deprecating analyst, and you're going to get a lot of value.
There you go.
Number two, the first thing that you should pursue is visibility. And that's probably the first step in, quote unquote, your IoT journey. That's that first problem that you tried to solve in supply chain as well, is getting visibility to your supply chain. And in logistics transportation, Kevin Ashton, who coined the term Internet of Things, I mean, he was using RFID technology for supply chain and track and trace, right? Once you have visibility where things are, that's tremendous insight that you have just knowing where things are.
I think as analysts, as evangelists, as practitioners in the IoT space, and I want IoT to succeed globally, part of our responsibility to help it succeed is we need to stop scaring customers. We don't think we're scaring them when we talk about these things that are 5 or 10 years out in the future, but we are. If a customer can realize IoT can be simple, I can get value through simple things. And yeah. I can also, there's ways to do this where it's not going to cost me millions or tens of millions of dollars. Then all of a sudden we may have more uptake and get beyond the hype. Because we're in a world of POCs, as you probably well know, in IoT. Mm-hmm. And we really need to move things to production. Things got to get a lot cheaper. Things got to be simpler. And people need to recognize that there is value to be had from very simple things.
So let's talk about the origins of IoT. What I'd like to ask you, Rob, is given that you're working with a lot of industrial clients on the topic of IoT, IoT is not necessarily a new thing for, let's say, the oil and gas industry, right? If you tell a CTO of an oil and gas company, hey, there's this new thing called the Internet of Things, and you break it down for them, they say, well, we've been doing this stuff for like ever. And oh, by the way, we're dealing with the most constrained scenarios that you can imagine outside of the military, right? But one of the things I wanted to get from you is some insight into how you think this whole topic of IoT has gone from industry to where it is today. And what are some of those things that are driving the evolution of IoT as we know it today and then moving forward in the future?
Yeah, it's always fun to talk about where all this stuff came from, all these old industrial things. On a big level, I hate to use the word democratization of ... but a lot of these technologies were the domain of maybe wealthier companies or the military or things like that. They could afford to have sensors, instrumented things, detecting things, and can do stuff with it, or analytics. While it was out there, and you can call it proprietary if you want to, and it ran on all kinds of weird protocols, not IP, but it existed. Back in industry, you know, industry 1.0 kicking off, what were people using? So much of this is about measuring. You can't manage what you can't measure. Part of the essential stuff of IoT is I need to measure something. I'm measuring a value. I'm measuring something. And we did that for years on paper. And actually, to my horror, I'm not as horrified anymore because I see it so often. Even though we are in the 21st century, technically, lots of people are still doing things on paper and transcribing into systems. I still see that today. So I'm over it. I used to be horrified, but I see it so often that I'm not horrified anymore. It's people are still, paper is still alive and well, which might be a good thing, you know, if you bring EMPs. As you make that progression, you have more things with sensors. You know, we kind of talked lightly about, you know, I used to be on submarines. And guess what? We had all kinds of sensors on submarines. We had gas sensors of all kinds of different gases that could kill us, you know, too much CO2, and we had those sensors to detect radiation. Is there a problem with the reactor sonar? We had all kinds of sensors. The sensors, I know people love to talk about what IoT is and what it's not, and they love to talk about everything but the things and everything but the sensors to describe what it is. But, you know, it all starts with those. The idea that we had sensors all over the submarine as we're traveling underwater, and we had that information remotely sent to us to dashboards to finding out, how is that any different than where we are today? It's just another way of doing the same thing. Obviously, aircraft have been doing that forever too. Lots of things have been doing that. When I first got out of the Navy off of submarines, the first startup I was at in the east side of Seattle in Bellevue was literally a company in the early 90s called Real Time Data. And they took dumb vending machines and we brought them to life. And why were we able to do that? I remember multiple teams of people. We had folks who were building firmware and putting a little black box, you know, burning EEPROMs, and we would put it inside Coke and candy machines, Pepsi, whatever, and put cabling in. We could see that we could figure out what the current status, how much inventory, how much money it's made, all that. Then we had some of the best RF engineers in the world. You know, you're at the dawn of the wireless age and wireless data. And we put that together. And then you had software. Gosh, I think we were running on Windows 3.1. And you put all that together, and we built technology that let a vending company could know the remote status of tens of thousands of vending machines. What's their inventory? What do people like? What do people not like? And all of a sudden, you could start making decisions that made those businesses run more efficiently. They saved tons of money. They made more money because they could do merchandising. They could predict how much money each machine should be making, all kinds of stuff. And it's really funny because today I'll see companies doing that same thing now, and they think they discovered it. and they're coming out the same value. Heck, on machines that required cooling, like a soft drink machine that has a compressor in it. Somehow, magically, we could predict failure on those things using plain old SQL, and we didn't need machine learning to do that. All those things ground me. I love that you're showing the bullet train there. I work for Hitachi. So Hitachi is one of the world's giant industrial conglomerates. Among other things, they make bullet trains. And so if you've been in Japan or other parts of Asia, you've probably ridden on a Hitachi bullet train, and you've probably been on Hitachi escalators and elevators and things all around you in a city that you didn't realize. What's really interesting, as we've progressed as an industrial company and using IoT, particularly the technology that I've been involved in creating, Lumato, which is our IoT, industrial IoT platform, is being able to put that kind of technology into a bullet train. You know how people often talk about, what are you going to get out of doing IoT? I'm going to save money. I hear that usually first. I'm going to find ways to make more money. I'm going to optimize my operations, whatever that means. And a lot of times I'll hear people say, oh, I'm able to have new business models. And a lot of people scratch their head because they don't understand what that means. So I'm going to give you a quick example of what that means and how we made it real at Hitachi, because it's your fault for showing the picture of the bullet train there, Larry. I know Dean wants to talk.
I don't know why.
Yeah. What did I do to you, Rob?
I know. I'm going to give you a clear example of how a business model has changed through the use of IoT because we made it real at Hitachi with Lumada. So we make bullet trains. So here's the quick story.
Okay.
The UK has all kinds of intercity trains that have been out there for decades and decades. And, you know, they're kind of old and wearing down and, you know, people complain. So, you know, the government, hey, we want to replace all those trains going between all the cities throughout the UK. So what do? You put out an RFI, an RFP, and all the usual suspects show up. You know, if anyone's read in the TGV in France with SNCF, you know, that's Alstom. You know, the ICE stuff in Germany, you know, I think that's Siemens. There's all those usual suspects who are going to show up to the party to answer that because they're the incumbents in Europe. Then comes along Hitachi, which has no footprint in Europe at all when it comes to bullet trains. You know, it's a totally an Asian thing. But Hitachi managed to win the deal. And how did it do that? It did it. It won it because of IoT. We often talk about software as a service. There's no shortage of software as a service packages, but lots of people think of Salesforce.
Salesforce.com. Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. What about, and so Hitachi was able to say, come to the table, hey, we're going to do trains as a service. You're not going to have to pay us tens of billions of dollars to buy trains in advance. We're going to take care of that for you. You're going to just subscribe to trains and do trains as a service. And we're going to have this SLA because we believe, because of our Lumada IoT technology and our analytics connected to, you know, we make bullet trains that have 40,000 sensors and this train management system, which is like the brain of the train, and Lumada and our edge stuff connected to it and our analytics. We feel comfortable that we can do a profitable business that way, and we can head off problems of the past, you know, predict failures before they happen so that we can pull this off. And so we won the deal because the UK didn't have to spend any money to do this deal. We said it's a subscription. And so we're rolling trains out throughout the UK. They're paying us monthly based on successful trips being completed and stuff like that. That's a great example of IoT changing your business model? Because, hey, what do we all know? Nobody's got any money anymore. I think earlier, one of you made the comment about smart cities. What do people keep running into with smart cities? Oh, there's no budget.
Right.
Yeah. In a world where money's tight, if you can change your business model to deliver things as a service where people can pay as you go with OPEX funds, maybe, if they can't afford it's a good thing. And so IoT made that real. And so that's a great industrial use case that's real today. It's happening.
We've also seen it in airplane engines
or jet
engines, right? What you guys have done with the trains is similar to what GE did with the jet engine, right? Basically, they were renting engines to airlines as a service and providing, right? To your point, new business models. And I think one of the things that I'm getting out of what you've just explained, Rob, is that, you know, you went back to the smart cities, the fact that they don't have money. But the thing is that what you guys did with the trains, you really have to think differently about your business and then recognize what the IoT technologies and, you know, solution enable in terms of a different model. And maybe that's the thing that governments, the local, municipal, and federal governments need to do. They really need to start thinking a bit differently about what is a city and how do we organize a city and operate a city.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. And you know what? I tell you, it's a tremendous risk on Hitachi's part to do this.
Oh, yeah. I can only imagine.
Yeah.
You know, these are really truly entrepreneurial, bold moves by companies that are considered incumbents, right? Dean, I think you were trying to squeeze something in there. Sorry about that.
Yeah. Well, no, I think the business model is great because now Hitachi is taking the risk on trains. So they're taking the depreciation on trains as things go on. They have to go in, they have to install the IoT platform and the software and the service engineers to help manage that. So there's a great deal that's on Hitachi's plate, and it takes ownership away from the UK rail system, where now they're able to manage trains. They manage schedules, they manage engineers to make sure the tracks are all running properly, but they don't have to worry about train maintenance. Or Hitachi can hire their train maintenance people to continue to maintain the trains because they've done it for years. So, and the same thing starts to go for smart cities, is smart cities have to be more innovative about, okay, how are we going to do this to make sure that we can do this on an OPEX situation, especially with the way cities have to bid things out, because they have to do multiple bids and potentially take the lowest bidder on that. And we know what that's done in past years. It can, you know, usually get crap systems in there because you get low quality because of a low bidder. How is that going to play out? And how are people going to have to be innovative in their thinking in order to implement some of these trains as a service or lighting as a service? And how are CFOs on the receiving end going to have to think and say, how can I manage that and do that? So, oh gosh, I don't have all this CapEx I've got to pay out and then depreciate over 5 to 10 years that cost the UK a huge sum of money. Now Hitachi's taking that ownership, but both areas are probably cash flow positive from day one.
Yeah, it's pretty cool stuff.
So we've talked about what industry has been doing with quote unquote IoT for a very long time and some of the cool stuff that players like, you know, Hitachi and GE are doing with creating new business models around it. Let's talk about where IoT is today, where now it's a pretty broadly talked about topic. It's, I think, gone beyond industry into the consumer space. I wanted to get both of your points of view, and maybe we can make a quick point here, of what's really changed to create this, let's call it an inflection point, where now the consumer markets are ready to talk about IoT and IoT-related solutions.
It sounds cliche, you know, how did we get this inflection point, this perfect storm? A lot of it's about money, where a lot of this technology used to only be used by the wealthiest companies. Now all of a sudden, sensors are getting really, really cheap, and you can get them anywhere. And microcontrollers are getting cheap, and now they maybe have a little operating system that some people can actually understand. Connectivity, ubiquitous wireless, you know, I say ubiquitous, it's still not quite there depending on where you are,
right?
But whether it's Ethernet in factories, whether it's, you know, cellular, whether it's things like Sigfox and LoRaWAN, whatever, we've got ways to send that data in a pervasive way that we didn't used to have. Then we get to that, the back end, whether you're capturing things nearby in an edge node or a server looking thing, a foggy thing, something in the cloud, all that's gotten a lot cheaper. You know, all these things cost a fortune. I mean, didn't we all live through the .com era and how expensive it was to buy all your Sun servers and put them in places and all that stuff? And now servers are cheap, cloud's cheap, storage is cheap. And then you have this other cross-cutting phenomenon. If we want to talk about analytics and advanced analytics, all of a sudden that stuff all became open source overnight. And so anybody can go to apache.org and download Spark, and they can grab Hadoop, and they can get Flink, and they can get a zillion different technologies that, again, used to be the province of wealthy companies. And now, if you can go take an online course or go buy a book for your real data scientist, you know, you can start using these free tools. And I think all those things put together has created this inflection point. And I think that's why IoT is talked about so much today, where maybe it wasn't in the past.
Rob hit it right on the head. You've had all the costs coming down over the years, slowly but surely, to the point where one day people woke up and said, wow, solid state storage is cheap. Compute power is cheap. Communications, not so cheap, but it's getting there as we start to go to low power wireless. And then the open source came in, where now I can start to connect all these things together in a much more economical manner that it says, okay, I used to do this by hand, or, you know, I do it with sensors that came into an Excel spreadsheet. I had an engineer take that Excel data and analyze it. Now I can automate all that, and it spits out something that is now usable that I can use to run my business better.
So we just woke up one morning and ta-da.
Yeah. Almost.
Yeah.
That's hilarious. Here. Well, if you are not already following Rob, you should. Like I said, he is the IoT Buddha. He's a wealth of knowledge and experience on IoT and many other digital topics. I mean, it's not just IoT. If you follow him, you're going to learn that this guy is a fantastic resource. And Rob has a blog, Digital Strategy and Insight blog, and it is at http://robtiffany.com. He also has a YouTube and podcast channel entitled The IoT Minute. And I will guarantee you one thing. It's not a minute. It's usually, what, Rob, 15 to 20 minutes. But it's absolutely fantastic stuff. And he regularly publishes and posts his insights through his YouTube channel as well as podcast. And you should follow on LinkedIn as well. And he's always posting his thoughts as well as insights that he's deriving from the world tour that he's always on, attending IoT conferences and the like. Make sure you follow him.
Thank you.
And yeah, you're more than welcome. Yeah. And if you would like to find out more about NextCurve's point of view on this and other digital topics of the day, go to our website. It's www.next-curve.com. And you'll find research notes, media, and replays of this and other webinars on our site. We will be posting replays of this session. We are also on Twitter and YouTube. Subscribe to our YouTube channel and friend us on Twitter to get live feeds and coverage of industry conferences that we're attending and special NextCurve events such as this. And if you would like to contact me, you can do so by email or phone for a scoping discussion to figure out how NextCurve can be part of your IoT journey. And you can contact Rob Tiffany. His information is here. If you're interested in figuring out what is Rob up to, and what are some of the fantastic things that he's doing with Hitachi and helping clients with their IoT journey?
Visit us at www.next-curve.com.